Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear, and I will permit it to pass over me. Where the fear is gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
On this episode, Andy and John are discussing the Dave Bautista sci-fi fantasy epic, Dune.
There's something happening to me. There's something awakening in my mind. I can't control it.
So grab the spice melange and put your hand in the box.
What's in the box?
Pain.
Welcome to the road home on Dune.
All right, welcome back to the Road Home from Wrestling. My name's Andy, coming to you live to tape for the Road Home from Wrestling World Mobile Headquarters of the world. Today I got John with me. Welcome back, John.
Thank you guys so much for having me back. It's been over 2 years since I've been here, and I'm sure all of you have been sending in emails to our inbox, you know, requesting where I'm at, giving me an update. Like, you just want to know what I'm doing. And I'm back to give you that joy and that satisfaction.
That's right. You know, people have been wondering. They want to know what John's been up to. It's been, I was shocked to find out that it had been over 2 years since we recorded a podcast together. That is shocking to me.
Listen, the Peacemaker TV show really took it out of me. And I just really had to take a sabbatical for these last 2 years and just wander the world.
That's right.
Trying to figure out what to do next.
You just got back from Australia, right, John?
I did. I took a 3-week vacation to not backpack. If anybody knows me, I am not a backpacker. I need a nice bed and I need air conditioning and like I need all my luxuries. And so I went and explored Australia and New Zealand.
Ooh.
For 3 weeks, hit up, you know, all the cool spots, hit up Brisbane, which is, I believe, the capital of Queensland. And then I went down to Tasmania, which I learned that a lot of Australians don't even go to Tasmania. Yeah. So, like, hey, obviously the foreigners, they hit up at all.
Is it because it's, like, cliche, like, going to Tasmania? It's like us going to Washington, D.C. or something like that?
I guess. I don't know. I was talking to one Australian guy who was on Survivor, and I was like, oh, he's like, well, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm not going to Tasmania this weekend. He's like, Tasmania? Why would you go there? Like, he was almost disgusted. And so... Luke, if you would like to chime in to let us know if Tasmania is a disgusting place to go. I found it to be rather charming and magical. Not Virgin Airlines, who canceled my flight 20 minutes before we were supposed to board. You guys are on my shit list for that one. But other than that, I also went to Sydney, which I believe is the capital of New South Wales.
Ooh.
And then I ventured over to Melbourne, which I believe is the capital of Victoria.
That's only 2 hours away from Luke.
Well,
you know, shit.
Well, where was he at?
Fucking around, probably. Which, well, Luke is the my co-host on the Never Open podcast, by the way, for folks listening that don't care about any of this. So.
And then I made a quick jump across the ocean over to New Zealand for a couple of days.
Did you see any Lord of the Rings shit?
Supposedly, I saw the mountains where they, Rivendell was at, which is where, like, all the elves lived.
But without the CGI, it's kind of tough, right?
It is tough. I couldn't not find them. I mean, they're hiding so good. But yeah, I believe, I think one of the Mission Impossibles was filmed there. They did, like a helicopter chase scene through the mountains.
Okay.
Where I, did a little tour, and then, yeah, I went back to Brisbane for a day. I then had a long layover in Fiji. So I hit up...
Wow.
I hit up three...
Damn, man.
I was in three different countries within the span of 24 hours, which was neat.
Wow.
But I was sleep-deprived when I got to Fiji, and I thought I was going to get sex trafficked.
Oh, yeah?
And I had a very horrible experience in Fiji, and I will probably never go back there.
Wow.
Just from my bad experience of being paranoid and thinking that I was going to be trafficked.
Man, well, I'm glad you weren't.
Me too.
I'm glad you trafficked yourself back home. Did you drink any of the water in Fiji? Because I hear they have great water. They put it...
No, I was avoiding everything. Oh, because okay. I just didn't know, you know.
I understand. All right.
I didn't know what was going
on. That's how they get you, maybe. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, they get you by not having set prices for anything and trying to haggle like I'm at a flea market. they got great beer down there. Ginger beer is super popular. Which it is a delight when it is hot outside. They put a little ice in there, put a lime.
Okay.
It goes down so smooth.
That sounds good.
But don't drink it too fast because you're not allowed to chug drinks down there.
Is that rude?
No, like, and they don't serve shots either. Like, there's literally a rule about, like, drinking.
Okay.
That, like, and if you appear drunk, they will not serve you anymore.
Well, binge drinking illegal.
Yeah.
In Fiji, you know.
That's sorry, that was Australia.
Oh, Australia.
My bad.
Well, I don't think that's true, but maybe the area you were at or something like that. I'll have to ask Luke. He's the expert on chugging alcohol. So
I just know in Brisbane, I was at like a little like Survivor get together, and one of the hosts challenged another guy to a drinking contest, and the bartender would not serve them beers to chug.
Wow.
And then they were like, okay, well, give us a shot. And he's like, I cannot serve you a shot either.
It sounds like that area's posh or something like that. And, you know, maybe the rest of Australia, they're just chugging beer all the time, you know?
Well, there ain't nobody living in the Northern Territory or the Western Territory.
I mean... You know, is it like Perth? Is it like Dune there? Is it just like Arrakis, you know?
It is like Dune. It's very sandy from what I hear. And I don't know that the people live underneath the sand and pop up to attack people. But I'm sure the snakes and the scorpions do.
Do they have giant butthole worms that run around eating everybody and you can make things out of?
Well, I think from what I've heard about, you know, the outback, there's a lot of things that are dangerous out there. So, and some of them are undiscovered. You know,
microscopic butthole worms that get in your blood, too. That's not good. So, well, we are here to talk about the movie Dune as well. But I'm glad you're back, John, and I'm glad to talk to you about a movie again. We went and saw a movie, and the last movie we had seen together was Wonka. So we are Timothy Chalamet, just like Chalamet-ing it up over here. How does this movie compare to Wonka? Did you like this better than Wonka? Because we loved Wonka.
Loved it, dude. They're two very different movies. Wonka was very charming and had this very, like, whimsical, like, wit to it.
We were cracking up. We were laughing so hard. It was great.
And it was also very colorful.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you come to this, and it's very brown. Sandy.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say that Dune is color-coded. So, like, when you're on the Harkonnen planet, everything's like this white, kind of like white and gray kind of color, right? Mm-hmm. And when we're on Dune, everything's that brown color. And so they kind of color-coded so that even dumb people can understand that we're in a different place. That's the idea.
Yeah, I mean, it works.
It does work.
But as far as which one I preferred more, I don't know. They're two they're so different. One's a musical and one's an action movie. I would probably go with Wonka because it was a little less than 2 hours.
And yeah.
This was pushing three.
Was it? Okay. It seemed really long. So we saw, you know, Dune on opening, you know, weekend here. It was a packed theater. We saw it in IMAX. It looked awesome. I really enjoyed it. I will reserve some of my thoughts for later, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. What was the viewing experience like? Did you like seeing stuff at this theater? Tell us about our seats, because you have a system for everything. I mean, we don't even need to get into the butter system, because that's a whole other thing, but but tell us about the seats.
So with the IMAX theater here in Whitechester, Ohio, they don't recline. The seats don't. So I'm very particular. I like to have my feet up during the movie. I like to be able to recline and have a great time.
Kick back, you know?
And so I purposely always book tickets, like, over the arch of the walkway, like, coming in.
Yeah.
Just so I have space to put my feet up. And also, there's nobody in front of you, so then, you know, you're good. But usually, we see movies in the Dolby Theater, which has, like, excellent surround sound, and the seats, like, suck you into them.
They're like kind of little sections almost, where it's like you and the person next to you are sitting next together, and you can't see anybody else, you know, which is kind of cool. Have you ever thought about doing a moonsault off that archway that you rest your feet on there?
No, I can barely, like, jump properly off the ground, so I'm not going to try and,
I think you could do one.
I'm not going to try and flip myself backwards.
No. Phoenix Splash?
No.
450?
Maybe just like a crossbody. but the IMAX theater, massive screen, super loud sound system. Like, there were some parts where I'm like, wow, the audio in this film is incredible.
It just is, right?
The way they use sound to their advantage, this should definitely, like, next Oscars maybe win, like, best sound mixing.
There was a lot of scenes where there was something going on. I think it's all diegetic or something like that. There was a lot of things going on where normally you'd have, like, in a movie, a song playing, but the people hear the song, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're reacting to the song as well, but you're hearing it as well. With this movie, what would happen is that there would be, like there's one of my favorite scenes was just this spice collector getting destroyed. And so the spice collector is grinding into the sand, and it's moving, and it's making this cool rhythm, and that's the music. That was the score, was that. And so there'd be these kind of like really nasty sounding horns over top of this kind of cool rhythmic thing, which I just thought was unbelievably cool. I gotta say, John, I really love this movie a lot. It's like I'm watching it and I'm going, is this the best movie I've ever seen? It might be so great.
I think it was better than the first one.
I agree.
And I mean, I think part of that is we now have established characters and we kind of know their backstory. But I think even just like, I don't know, storyline wise, I thought this one was a little bit more like structured and had a point.
That's cool.
To it.
Yeah. A lot more happened too.
Yeah.
It's
a lot more streamlined. I feel like the first one, you had like 7 different plot points going on and they were all trying to merge into one.
Yeah.
And whereas this one, those 7 plot points merged into like 3. And so now we had like 3 different stories going, but it was easier to follow this time around.
Okay. Well, I defer to you on that because I already know the story, right? If you guys don't know, I'm the Dune head and John's new to Dune. You know, I read the books and watched the fucking sci-fi series over and over and over again on Sci-Fi Channel, and I love the story. And so I've always wanted, you know, like, to me, the Sci-Fi Channel one was the definitive Dune. I like the David Lynch one, but it's not like, it's difficult to follow, you know,
and that's
big
just
time.
That's just part of the story.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Just one part. Whereas, you know, the Sci-Fi Channel series actually goes through the first like 3 or 4 books, I think, and pretty much tells you almost the whole story of Paul Atreides and his family. So, because that's just one part of Dune. Dune is very complicated and it gets really deep. But let's, you know, we're not going to break down the plot of it or anything like that. We'll talk about some stuff we like, but let's talk about each one of these actors one by one and see how you thought they did, John.
Well, there's a lot of actors in it, so I don't know if we'll go through everyone. But
every single one.
We'll go through some surprising ones. I didn't know Christopher Walken was in this.
Okay, I had heard that, yes.
You might know Christopher Walken.
He was the Papachan, or whatever you call it, Emperor, and, you know, which is, that's his house name, is like Papachan or something like that. I can't remember. Some of the P. But yeah, he was in it. He kind of gave one of those like Peter O'Toole in Alexander performances or Troy or whatever it is, where he just doesn't get up. He's like sitting the whole movie, which I thought was funny. So
yeah, he's just chilling the whole time. You have Florence Pugh, who was also in this for all of 7 minutes.
So she's Princess Irulan, who is the daughter of the Papawatch Emperor guy. What did you think of her performance, Luke?
Well, I was
Your name's John.
Yeah, my name's John. I was very excited. She was making her triumphant return to the podcast.
Man, our first ever episode, right?
It was. It was Fighting With My Family.
That's right.
The story of Paige, a.k.a. Soraya, or is it Soraya?
I don't know.
I don't watch AEW, so I don't know.
AEW can fuck off, yes.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, but she is making her triumphant return. What did you think of her performance in Dune?
I feel like we didn't see enough of her, but her, like, really sick S&M outfit towards the end of the film, where she had, like, razor blades covering her, like, nose and mouth.
That was pretty dope. Her outfits were cool.
I'm like, man, she is like going to a sex party after this, and she is ready to go.
She's watching, though. You know what I mean? In that outfit, you're watching. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, you're cutting things up if you don't.
I thought she was great. You know, she like stood. there looking regal, and we heard her thoughts, because, like, kind of one of the things is that Princess Irulan is the writer of the Dune kind of story in the actual, like, books, kind of. That's the idea. Like, a chapter will begin with her kind of, like, paragraph from her histories or whatever that she wrote. So we get to see some of that happening. And that's, I will say, there are many times during, I mean, not many times, the entire time I'm watching this movie, I was marking the fuck out for shit like that. Like, oh my God, we're seeing her write the history. Holy shit. You know, yeah. And the whole movie was like that for me. So,
yeah. Well, and for me, I didn't know that. I kind of like picked up on it because this movie kind of starts with her giving a rundown of like what happened previously. So it makes sense that she's kind of like the historian of the film.
She's involved in a huge plot twist towards the end, too. And John was like, what?
Some other people that were in this. Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
I forgot that he was in the first
one. Gurney Halleck? You know? What did you think of Josh Brolin in Dune?
I thought it was fine. I mean, he's cooler as Thanos, but, you know.
He was comedic comedy relief a little bit here and there. At you times. Know?
You didn't know if you could trust him.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's good. Okay.
Because I was very, like, at this point, you know, he kind of comes into the movie, spoilers, guys. I know I'm not the one who usually gives spoilers, but spoilers. he comes in, like, halfway through the movie, and you kind of, like, forgot that he was, I mean, I literally forgot that he was in the first film, and so I kind of thought he was just dead. And so when he pops up, you kind of don't trust him, because he's, you know, like, a smuggler, and he's, like, you know, kind of a dirty guy, and at this point, I'm, like, on the side of Zendaya or Shani. Chani?
Yeah,
Chani. Chani?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was Johnny for the entire film. Chani. Because I'm on the side of, like, you know, the
Fremen, right?
Yeah,
the suppressed people. We're all on the side of the Fremen, right? The Fremen are awesome. We want them to win, you know?
Yeah, so when he shows up, I'm like, oh, this isn't going to be good, because that's ties to the old world. This can't be good.
In the books, that's played up a lot more, that we don't know if we can trust him. But in the books, what happens is that they're like, wait, this is the guy that trained Muad'Dib how to fight? Can we, like have him train us? That's kind of what happens, right?
Wasn't that Jason Momoa? What happened to him?
So,
did he die in the first
one? He did. He died in the first one, right?
I thought he was still alive.
Yeah.
I was waiting for him the entire time.
He may come back one day. We don't know. You know, so he may be in future films. A lot of these characters, any character that dies in Dune may come back in a different way. Because there's ways that people can come back in ways that are unexpected, or maybe the first time that's ever happened in sci-fi. So there's some tropes that play out with stuff like that later on in the story. But, Josh Brolin, I thought he did good, though, because he's, I don't know, man, he's a good Gurney Halleck. To me, Gurney Halleck is the guy from the Sci-Fi Channel one. But at the same time, like you said, you're right. They really play up the thing where he's, you know, you don't know if you can trust him at first. And there's a lot more of that in the book. So you were good to pick up on that.
Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
Made his return
Stilgar.
Again.
Stilgar. Yeah, he's Stilgar. He's the leader of one of the sieges of the Fremen, right?
Yes.
And so, and that's the one that, you know, Shawnee's from and several other people.
He's very gung-ho on thinking that Paul Atreides is the Messiah.
That's right.
Who's come to save them.
Mm-hmm. And he's also comedy relief quite a bit, because he says a lot of funny shit. And he's, like, head over heels in love with Paul Atreides as his savior. So he says comically over-the-top, like, religious things quite a bit, and people giggled. A lot of people got the giggles with him, you know?
We had the worst character in the entire film, Rebecca Ferguson, who plays Jessica, Paul Atreides' mother, or Reverend Mother.
That's right.
So, I hate her
you
so
don't like
much.
Her, huh?
I hated her in the first one.
You did. You didn't like her then, yeah.
She was a total see you next Tuesday.
So, in this movie, she's got this, like, there's these two things going on, right? And, I mean, there's more than just two. But the two main things going on is that Paul Atreides and his mother have got to make their line survive. They've got to rise to power again. That's the only thing they care about, right? But there's also these Fremen who think that Paul Atreides is maybe their savior. So they're struggling with whether they want to, you know, do this and become, you know, use the religion of these people to kind of take advantage of them and make an army out of that, or if they don't. And so they use the characters of Jessica and Shawnee to kind of like show the two sides of that, right? And something else that is not made clear about by the movie, but is by the end, you should know this, but it's not something they say, is that the reason why these two characters are such good at, they're like good, you know, showing both sides, is because Shawnee is also Paul's concubine, and mm-hmm. Jessica was never married to Duke Leto. She was his concubine. So they play the same mm-hmm. role in the family, and that's not talked about at all in the movie, but it's a big deal in the book. So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of forgot that she wasn't married to his father.
It's important. It's really important, and they don't really talk about it much. So,
well, speaking of Shawnee,
yeah,
Zendaya, also, did she make her return? Has she been around?
Well, she was in the first Dune, so yes, she's making her triumphant return to the podcast. Well, you know, great to see her. You know, she's always awesome.
How do you feel about her? What's your favorite role she's been in?
I mean, Euphoria.
Yeah, she's like, really good.
It's Euphoria. Incredible. There's okay, so during COVID, Euphoria had to take time off, and they were like, "Well, fuck, we're riding this hot thing. We got to keep mm-hmm. it going." So there's like this 2-episode thing where it's just her and this guy, like, kind of having a little AA meeting one-on-one in a restaurant, and it is some of the best shit you'll ever see. It's so incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. And then even in the second season, did you watch the second season?
I watched it all.
Where she's like, I think she's
like with, ODing going, and she's got all kinds of problems.
Yeah, ODing and
she's got the,
like going through withdrawal and like becomes crazy, and it is such an incredible performance. I mean, I think she's probably one of the best actresses of like this newer generation that's coming up. Like we're going to see her for a very long time.
Yeah. It's hard to disagree with that. And the fact that she's got that thing that like a movie star that's the thing, is that like, there's great actors, but then there's movie stars.
Yeah, like they have this presence about
them. You can't like look away from them when they're on the screen. And her with blue eyes, like fucking amazing, right? With all this like cool desert shit. The costumes are so incredible. But she does a lot of looking in this movie, right? Giving dirty looks or giving happy looks or whatever. Or
questioning looks. She's very... it's like she doesn't like know exactly what to think. And so she's just always like pondering and thinking that the other shoe's going to fall and like things are going to go haywire. And this, you know, they do. but
there's a scene the scene was in the movie, but it wasn't exactly, I mean, I'm not nitpicking. I'm just saying there's this line from the book where Shawnee is, you know, and Mod Deep are like hanging out. They probably just banged or whatever. And she's talking, he's telling her about his homeland. And if you don't know, like he's for the Atreides homeworld is a water planet, right? So Arrakis is the desert planet. So he tells her about water and about how it's everywhere and you can like swim in it, and she doesn't fucking believe him.
Yeah.
And in the book she says it in this really cool way. She's like, "You tell me about the waters of your homeland, Muad'Dib," and it's like this amazing line, and they didn't use that line. But we did get that scene and it was pretty awesome. I loved it. I was marking out. So.
And well, another, I would say, generational actor that we've been blessed with. Timothée Chalamet, Paul Atreides.
Okay, so in the first one, you were like, I don't know. You didn't seem to like him that much in the first one, as far as like, you didn't like the character of Paul Atreides.
Yes.
So what do you think about him? He, in the first movie, he was very like stiff and almost childlike at times, you know, and but that's because he was supposed to grow up into this man with blue eyes that's leading an army. What do you think?
I think I got behind him a little bit more this film, and I was much more into, like, his character arc, until towards, like, probably, like, 2/3 through the film, and then I turned on him.
Why? Okay.
He started drinking the Kool-Aid of his mother, and,
literally.
yeah. And I think he's now very, like, full of himself, and, is very blinded by... hatred and revenge, and that's something I think Shawnee was trying to, like, you know, calm him down, being like, "Hey, you don't have to get revenge for your, like, father's death. Like, sometimes you can just, like, let it go. But he's so blinded by, I think, the thought of being a ruler, that he's kind of, like, gone to the dark side.
Okay.
I feel like. And he's got, like, a messiah complex, and which I was not expecting the whole, like, messiah deal in this film. They kind of, like, touched on it in the first one, but this one is, like, full-blown, like, second coming of, like, Jesus or Muhammad or, you know, whatever religious figure you want to use. And it was kind of, like, shocking.
You were shocked, okay.
I think I was a little
good.
Shocked.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
But yeah, Timothy Chalamet, what are your thoughts? You like Timothée?
I think that he is fine. I don't know that I get fired up if I see that he's going to be in a movie.
I do.
I mean, did he do great in this movie? Yeah. Is he believable as Paul Atreides? Yeah, absolutely. I think that he did a good job. I don't know that somebody else could maybe have done a better job, possibly. But it's
you
like...
You wanted Tom Holland, didn't
you? No. I prefer the author Tom Holland. He writes Ancient Roman books. But anyway, it's like there's scenes where he's yelling and he's like, I am the guy who is going to lead you. I am. And it's a little bit meh, you know, but it's kind of like one of those, you know, cringy things, as the kids say. But it's kind of supposed to be that way, because you're not supposed to feel okay with how he handles this, right? The idea is that Paul Atreides takes the water of life in order to, you know, kind of like that's the path he sees, right? And what happens to him, it happened in the first movie too, he sees the future, but he sees a version of the future, right?
Yeah.
Now he sees the actual future, okay? And so he can't turn away from his destiny anymore. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen, right? It's kind of like that kind of thing. But what's cool about it in the books is that, like, in the books, they kind of pick and choose, and they're a little more careful as far as the mother and son combo on what they choose to take advantage of when it comes to the prophecies and stuff like that. In this movie, it almost seems like Stilgar is the guy that's like, hey, let's do some prophecy shit. You know what I mean? So,
well, yeah, because his mother is, like, manipulating people.
Yes.
To, like, pursue, or, like, to push the narrative of him being, like, the next coming of
because the Messiah. Because she sees the future, too, though. And so, it's in the book, they call it the Golden Path. In this movie, he talks about the storms everywhere, but the little tiny sliver that they can get through. And that's the only future for the Atreides. And that's maybe the thing you're sensing, where it's like, well, he just wants glory for his house. And he does! And that's the thing that they don't really say in the movie. It's subtext. But, yes, like, the reason why he wants all this shit is not so that he's alive and not so he wins a war. It's so that he gets glory for his house and brings them back to their former glory.
Prestige.
And you know, revenge versus his father. They even say at one point, his father didn't believe in revenge, right? You know? Right. But Harkonnen says, your father was a pussy, basically. Yeah. So...
All right, and the last actor we'll highlight is the reason we're even doing this podcast.
That's right.
Because if it wasn't for him, there'd be no reason for us to talk about wrestling. Right. Dave Bautista. What's your favorite Bautista match? I feel like we've talked about this, but maybe it's changed. Like, maybe you've been, like, going through his back catalog and checking things out.
I have to admit, you know, Dave Bautista plays Raven in this, I think, right? Isn't he? Or is he...
Yeah, he's Raven.
Raven, okay, yeah, in this movie, which is one of the two Harkonnen, you know, like, nephew guys that are trying to vie for their father's, you know, whatever. But he... I really like him as an actor. Like, I'm not a big fan of him as a wrestler, honestly. Wow. I wasn't really watching during his heyday. I just wasn't. So I haven't seen a ton of his matches. If I had to say, the only one I can really think of that I liked would be him, you know, versus Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton at WrestleMania 30. You know, and it's because he got tapped out by Daniel Bryan at the end of that. So that was fantastic.
Well, that's because he took Daniel Bryan's spot, and everyone, that's the whole Yes movement.
Blue Tista.
The whole Yes movement came out of that, because he came back as, like, the Hollywood actor and took Daniel Bryan's spot in the main event of Mania, and so they kind of, like, the fans
were like,
forced their hand to get Daniel Bryan in the main event. I think mine I don't know.
Sorry for not asking.
Yeah, it's okay. I forgive you. Usually I forget to ask you anything. So, I don't know. Evolution? I think his whole run with Evolution, with him.
They're a mystery. Evolution. Yeah,
that is. They are a mystery. Him, Triple H, Orton, Flair. I thought they were great, like, quad pod, you know? Running WWE for a long time there.
About the when they came back and they faced like the Wyatt family? Isn't that a fair? Was it the Shield? Okay.
No, that wasn't good.
No, okay.
It's because they were missing Flair.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, thankfully AEW's got Flair wrestling getting physical in the ring now. So it's okay. Like, hey, Flair's back, and I'm so happy for you guys over on that show. Yeah, I don't know. Him and Triple H had a really good Hell in a Cell match.
Okay.
After Evolution broke up.
What's your favorite Batista movie that we've reviewed?
Favorite Batista movie that we've reviewed? I don't know. We didn't do the James Bond.
No.
We didn't do Spectre.
We never did.
We did Dune 1. What other Batista movies have we done?
Well, My Spy. There's a couple of them, right? I mean, there's another one in there somewhere. I can't remember which one is. One where he was, like, working at a bike shop or something like that. Maybe that's My Spy.
It was probably My Spy. Yeah. My Spy was such a charming, crafty movie.
Oh, my God. It's a piece of shit. It was such a piece of shit that they barely released it in theaters and, like, dumped it on streaming right away. It was one of the first movies to do that during, like, COVID, where they were like, well, we don't even want to release this, so.
Well, I know we came and watched it in a theater.
We did.
So I know it was a real thing.
It was so bad. Well, how do you think he did in this movie? He was real angry. He was mad.
The problem is, so, like, the IMDb listing has 101 actors listed.
Wow.
In this film. And technically there's 102, because there's a random one-off character that's in this that is not listed in here.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, do we want to spoil who that is?
I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about. So,
Anya Taylor-Joy?
Oh, right. I forgot. Yeah.
She makes a random, right? Like, 2-second appearance.
Yeah, in The Vision, you know. Yeah. So it, and that's it. What did you think? Okay, so there's a part in this movie where Jessica Atreides is pregnant with a child that she can communicate with, and the child is already, like, sentient, basically, and communicate with her. And how this happens is because she drinks the water of life while she's pregnant. They both become Bene Gesserit, like Reverend Mothers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's a Reverend Mother before she's even born. What do you think of that? I mean, that's pretty silly. Do you think it came off silly or not?
Yeah, it came off really stupid, honestly. Because there's a point where she's like, Paul, your sister is saying this to you. And I was like, what? She's in the womb. She can see that you're afraid. What? How? Her brain's not even developed.
Well, so when you drink the water of life, what happens is that you get all of the memories of every, you know, Reverend Mother that came before you. And that's centuries and centuries of knowledge, right? So that's why even the baby knows everything now. So what's that baby going to be like when she's born? Well, I guess we won't know, because she never came out. What the hell?
She's going to be annoying, is what she is.
You have no idea.
She's going to come out just, like, talking, like, so much smack. And, like, it's going to be stupid.
Man. I can't wait. The sister storyline is so bizarre, and it gets even crazier and crazier. What did you think? Obviously, spoilers for this movie, but I want to talk about some of these funny plot twists. What did you think, like, when they randomly found out I'm a Harkonnen? Where, you know, Paul Trey's like, wait, I'm a Harkonnen? Wait, no, what's that about?
Again, I thought it was, like, it's almost like a throwaway line that they do, because they're just, like, they're talking in a crowd, and then all of a sudden the crowd's gone, and his mom's just like, hey, babe, Baron's my grandpa. Catch you later. And I'm like, what? It's like a throwaway scene.
Kind of is, right?
That seems like a pretty critical plot point that they, like, it's a throwaway.
It is really important going forward, too. And I'm interested to see how, because they've already announced that they are going to do Dune Messiah. So, you know, that'll be the next movie. And it'll probably be 2-3 years before it comes out, I'm sure. But how about this? Why don't we talk about the effects, the look of it? I mean, we talked a little bit about the coloration and stuff like that. But, I mean, I'll just tell you straight up, I just I was blown away by some of the stuff that happens in this movie as far as the effects and the way it looked and how real it felt and how accurate to what I picture when I was reading those books. It was like they got my brain, John. How'd they do that?
I don't know. I know visually it's very stunning. It made me think of... So, I with me going to Australia, I now have the goal of... I want to go to every continent.
You have the memories of every John before you that's traveled to Australia now.
Sure, I do. But I want to go to every continent, and I'm thinking... I'm looking at this movie, and I'm like, I need to go look at... I need to see sand dunes.
Yeah.
Like that. So, like, do I need to go to, like, Dubai? Or do I need to go to, like, Egypt? Like, where did they...
I
need to figure out where they filmed this, because... It's such a, like, gorgeous, like, view and landscape that, you know, I've seen mountains, I've seen the ocean, I've seen forests. I've sort of, like, I've been to a desert, but I've never seen, like, a desert by this standard.
I mean...
So, like, I kept, like, during this movie being like, where did they film this? Because it is so stunning that I want to, like, visit it.
I'm thinking it's a studio.
You think
so? With a bunch of green screens.
All that sand?
I think some of it was. You know, there's some stuff that was, like, obviously in a sound stage. But I don't know. That's good composite work right there, I think. But it could be that
they did... You think these buttholes, worms, are fake?
John, what did you think? We joked around about the giant buttholes last time. What did you think of the buttholes and their role? And I'm interested to know, what do you think about the buttholes? Like, what are they? What
well,
is it?
Well, I loved the buttholes so much that I bought one of the... I didn't buy it. I wanted to buy one. The movie theater chains here in America are selling popcorn buckets that... are the butthole monsters.
Those sandworms.
The sandworms. Where you, like, it has the teeth and you, like, stick your arm, like, through the opening to grab the popcorn.
Yeah.
And, like, pull it back out. So, like, they look very suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
They look...
Looks like some kind of sex toy. That's
very much
like
a fleshlight. And so, I mean, it's very... a gaping hole. Like, nobody's...
Hot dog down a hallway.
Yeah,
like
nobody.
I said, yeah.
Nobody's filling that up. But, like, you and two of your buddies could.
Yeah, that's
if,
true.
If you were into that,
that's
like,
true.
You guys could put your own butter on that popcorn.
If you like Dune a lot, you really like Dune. So.
But I liked that there were more than, like, two sandworms this time. There
tons
was,
of them.
Well, they'd be counting like seven on the screen.
You got little baby sandworms. What'd you think of that? They killed a baby sandworm and then stuck, like.
And
like
then they milked
juice,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sucked its piss out, as they called it, which is a blue liquid. I don't know. I thought it was creepy.
Good.
But I thought that the baby ones were much more doable.
Yeah.
Than the big ones.
Would you drown in the water first, or would you?
You'd probably just, like, stick it down there and use it.
Okay. So the sandworms. They live in the desert.
Yes.
The one thing that they never talk about is they hate water. They hate it. They absolutely hate it. They stay away from water at all times.
Well, is there water on this planet?
So, yes. If you, like, there's actually the Atreides. Remember they had trees and shit like that in the first one? And they had, like, a little garden and stuff. Like, stuff like that the sandworms stay away from. They hate water.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this movie, they take a sandworm, baby one, and just drown it, right?
Yeah.
And that happens in the books. It's a little, what do you think the sandworms are? There's a big, like, thing about them that, like, it's just important to the story, and they haven't even touched on it yet.
I don't even know. I just thought they were giant worms that have teeth and eat things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's just say the worms are important to the survival of Arrakis and the survival of anyone who rules Arrakis, right? Because as we know, if the spice does not flow, it's the end of the world, pretty much, right? So
are they, like, just the movers of the spice?
Something like that. We'll have to wait till Doom Messiah to find out, I guess.
Or is there, like, spice underneath the sand that they're, like, pulling up to the top?
Maybe.
I mean, I know you got to be able to ride them.
Maybe they are spikes. I don't know. It could be something like that. I don't know. But it's interesting, and it's a really cool deal when that's finally revealed. I thought they'd reveal that in this movie because the lore behind the worms is so fucking cool, man. And what the spice is and how it's made and how it appears naturally and all this shit and how the humans fit into that cycle. It's fucking nuts. And I just am sad that we didn't get any of that. But it's some of it could be inferred. But anyway, man, what do you think overall of this movie?
I really enjoyed it. I think the one thing I before we left the theater that I noticed, I think George R.R. Martin took a lot of liberties from the Dune story.
Probably.
To write the Game of Thrones books. And he was just like, oh, I bet if I put this in the Tundra era, no one will notice. And he's right. None of us noticed until today.
No one's ever said this. Right.
So, well, it's like, this felt very much like a Game of Thrones style story because they started introducing the other houses. And so now there's a big battle for the throne. And even like a Baron Hotchkins or whatever his name was.
Baron Harkonnen. Yes.
Harkonnen, you know, as he was, you know, dying and breathing his last breaths. He was still going for the throne. Like, he was still trying.
Yeah, he was still trying to crawl towards the throne.
He thought that if he just sat on it, that he would automatically get rulership.
You were laughing about that. You thought that was funny. He's like, you know that scene where what's his name? Varys is like, what do you want? And, you know, it's a Littlefinger, and Littlefinger points at the throne. You know, it was like that, man, you know?
It's like everyone wants the throne. So it very much gave, like, Game of Thrones vibes, which, you know, I think, you know, is correct. Mm-hmm. And so I loved Game of Thrones.
Okay, so you like this movie then?
So I now that we even have that added layer, I think I like it even more.
Okay.
Now, so I'm very much looking forward to the next movie and seeing where it was. Because I kind of, my brother saw this yesterday, and he kind of like, I was like, hey man, does this like actually have an ending, or like, is this just another like middle point? And he was like, it's a middle point. So I kind of was like discouraged by that, because I'm like, man, I kind of wish I would have known that it was going to be like a trilogy.
Because the first movie just ended, right? And you're like, aw, right?
But this one, so going in knowing that this was, you know, kind of like a middle ground, I kept like wondering, like, oh, where's it going to cut off? Where's it going to cut off? Where's it going to cut off? But I felt like they cut off at a pretty good spot of like to set us up for the next one, because the next one is like our Return of the King big battle movie.
This movie ends, Dune Part 2 ends with all of the Fremen getting on spaceships and going to fucking space, and like Jessica going, the holy war begins. Now, in the book, they call it the jihad all the time. With jihad this, jihad that. That's what they're constantly saying. So they're going to be calling it the holy war here, I guess, which is, it's cool that they finally said it, though. I was like, oh, finally!
Yeah. So, yes, I really much enjoyed it. How about yourself? Was it everything you wanted it to be?
Yeah, and more. I loved it. I loved it so much. Like, it's like, I can't wait to go back to these movies in like 5 years or 10 years or something like that, and just be like, relive how much fun I had the night watching this, because I had so much fun. I was pumping my fist. I was just laughing, bursting out laughing for no reason, because of all the little tiny things in this movie that were just gave me joy and tickled me, because they just did this shit right, man. Okay, here's an example of stuff that makes me mark out about this movie that is like, it's brave. I'm not trying to say that anyone who's a Hollywood actor or director or some brave person. But what I mean is, I don't know how else to describe it. There are characters in the book who cover their face, right? Well, you can't cover actors' faces, right? Even in like Game of Thrones, for example, they never wear helmets, right?
Right.
Because you can't cover their face. So in this movie, they just leave those characters with their face covered. And it's like, and sometimes they're acting from behind just a fucking sheet over their face. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, that's really brave. I can't believe you did that, you know?
Yeah. And even like Zendaya and Timothée, like they both had their faces covered plenty of times throughout this movie. And you're right. A lot of times the actors always like, no, you gotta see the moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, so it was much more accurately depicted,
so
to speak,
right,
for a sand sci-fi movie?
Well, normally in a movie, the story and the actor's face or whatever they're trying to portray in the scene would take precedence over everything, right?
Right.
In this, they're trying to be accurate to the book and you know, in a way that's not going to fuck the story up, but in a way that's kind of brave because it could. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I thought I was pretty... That made me very happy, and there's, like, a million other things in the movie like that that I think were pretty cool, so...
Yeah, like, Jessica's got stuff over her face the entire movie, which is good, because she's a total B-word, and we don't need to see her anyways.
She's got the Hakuchi tattoos on her, or whatever.
Yeah, when did she get those? Like, we didn't get that scene in the movie.
That would have been great.
Yeah, it was her getting her face tattoos after she drank the blue stuff.
Yeah, I liked her a lot more in the first movie. She was much more, like... I think she's a good guy in this movie. Yeah. She's like, oh my God, she's evil. So I every time her. She was on screen, I was laughing because how evil she was portrayed. So.
Hated her from the jump.
From the first man.
Because even in the first one, she's like tricking Paul into putting his hand inside the box.
Yeah.
And it might kill him. And she's like, oh, that's a risk we're willing to take here.
What did you think of the brother of Raben? I can't remember his name. Fade. And it, like
Austin Butler.
So Boston Butler and,
Austin Butler.
So there's this scene where this chick shows up and she starts kind of wooing him. But I thought it was Princess Irulan for a little bit because she looks exactly like her. That was kind of surprising. Maybe that's a cut scene or important for later. But anyway, she's like trying to woo him and all of a sudden he's kissing her kind of. And she's like, stick your hand in the box.
And I'm like, what?
It's so funny. It would have been so great if you looked down and she's got one of those popcorn buckets.
When you're like, which box?
You know? Exactly.
But then it pans down and it's got the little like PS2 drive.
The pain box and PS2 drives.
For him to stick his hand in.
Oh man, that character was great. And he did. I'm glad they waited to introduce him until this movie because he got the whole arc. You know, he showed up. He was fucking nuts. What did you think of the scene where Harkonnen, like, we meet Fade and he performs in the gladiatorial situation, but it turns out that his like worked match is actually a shoot kind of. What did you think of that?
I thought it was a nice twist. I didn't necessarily like pick up on it right away. Because again, they gave the work-shooted guy a shot, and it was very like it was a passing scene.
Yeah,
it's like if you weren't paying attention, or if you like went to run and go pee, you would have totally missed like that part. But I enjoyed it. He proved himself.
He did.
I kind of wish that he stayed in the movie longer. I was hoping he'd be in the next one.
Yeah, well, they kind of,
spoiler,
like...
Spoiler, he's gone.
I think one of the reasons that the girl that, like...
Well, she's got knocked up by him.
Right, yeah, exactly. The girl that he knocked off, the reason why she looked kind of like Princess Irulan is because she's maybe gonna... That was maybe gonna be a match, too, in the future. You know what I mean? And so maybe they were just playing with that a little bit. But yeah, so that means that... Who else is pregnant in this movie, by the way? Because we don't know, and there might be other characters that are pregnant.
I'm gonna assume Zendaya's pregnant.
Yeah, she might be, you know? And if she's pregnant with a... See, that's the other thing, is that Timothy Chalamet, he drank the water of life. He's the only man to ever drink water of life and survive.
So how strong is his semen gonna be?
That's right.
You know?
Blast right through her back.
But
you know?
They didn't hook up after he drank the water of life.
Maybe.
Well, no, because she was mad at him.
There was a bunch of, like...
She slapped him.
Yeah, that's true. But there was a bunch of time jumps.
There
you know what I mean?
There's
and I thought something that was neat. They used his eyes and the color of his eyes to kind of tell you the story a little bit. Mm-hmm. As far as like, oh, it's been a little while because his eyes are starting to turn blue and shit like that. I don't know.
But the mom was still pregnant the entire time.
She was preggers the whole time. So it's like an 8.5 month movie or 7 month movie or something like that. I tell you what, one of my favorite parts too was the other Fremen razzing on Paul Atreides and talking shit about him at first. That shit was so funny. So, anyway, I really love this movie, John. I thought it was great. Do you recommend Dune 2?
Oh, of course. I mean, especially if you saw the first one, you have to see this one. But even if you haven't seen the first one, I mean, you might be a little confused if you pop in on this one. But so I'd maybe watch that one on Max before you come see this one. But definitely come see it.
Yeah. I thought that this one was a lot more comprehensive as far as, like, they explained more.
Yes.
You know, it didn't show as much. Like, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good balance. Whereas the first one, I think they showed a lot more than they explained. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Which I'm not mad about because I already knew the shit. But I feel like if somebody is first watching it, maybe they wouldn't. They'd like the second one better. That's kind of what you felt like, right?
Yeah, I think I enjoyed this one more.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess you could say this is like the Empire Strikes Back of...
Yeah, but...
this series. But it's, so we don't know what the third one's going to be.
I mean, it did get dark there towards the end. But, which, I mean, he won, so...
Other... what trilogies do you like the middle movie more than the first and the last one? We don't know how the last one's going to be.
Yeah, but. I mean, I do like Empire Strikes Back the most, but I like, you know, the first two of those movies fantastic. You know, third one's cool, but it's not the best.
Return of the Jedi is actually my favorite.
Is it? Okay. Of those, it's my least series. Favorite, but...
The Lord of the Rings series, The Two Towers is my favorite of that trilogy.
Okay.
I've never seen it all the way through. I've fallen asleep every time I've seen it. But I've seen it, like, all together, like, if you piece it together. But Two Towers.
Okay.
Excellent.
So, I think as a kid, I like Back to the Future 2 better than Back to the Future 1. As an adult, I like the first one more. But the second one's tremendous. Third one's kind of goofy, but it's funny.
I stopped after the second one. They jumped the shark for me.
I saw the third one in a theater, John. That's how old I am. So,
I think Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze is better than the original.
I can't think of a book. Oh, like Godfather 2 is the best of the Godfather trilogy. A lot of people think that. So
Batman Returns is better than the first Batman.
I mean, I tell you what, though. Dark Knight Rise or Dark Knight?
Dark Knight is
better that's better than either one of those movies. Yeah. Man, that Dark Knight Rises, what the fuck happened there? It was a piece of shit. Anyway.
They tried to do too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dune's not a piece of shit, though, and I recommend it wholeheartedly. I loved watching this movie, and I even loved it more because I got to watch it with you, John.
Oh,
so happy.
Gosh. After 2 years.
I know.
It was so great to finally see you after 2 years.
That's fantastic. Well, John, thanks for joining me. It was really good to see you again. I hope everybody enjoyed us talking about Dune. We didn't get into it too nitty and gritty, but man, fuck y'all. You know, so, I mean, we did a podcast episode. That's the best. That's all you can get.
Yeah, you got me back. So, you know, whatever. Deal with it.
Yeah, imaginary people out there complaining. Stop complaining. But anyway, well, for me and my guest and co-host of the podcast, The Road Home on Film, Road Home for Wrestling Style, John, thank you so much for listening.
Sayonara.